In 86, Anne M. Martin wrote the first book of what became a cult. Now it's time, the Babysitter's Club.
Baby Nation.
Baby Nation. Actually, is this a Kids Incorporated episode, technically?
No, Kids Incorporated is gone. It's anything, it's going to be a Goliath Industries episode. But
Goliath Industries?
Yeah, we talked about that last episode. Kids Incorporated got bought out by Goliath Industries. So Kids Incorporated Inc. became Goliath Industries.
Right.
A podcast in which I...
Yeah, Jack Shepard.
Jack Shepard.
Yeah.
And
I, Goliath Hardbody.
Yeah. And I, Mark Markson, I'm new here.
Talk about the growth industry that is babysitting conglomerates.
In small towns that may or may not exist in Connecticut.
Tell me, Mark.
Yes.
What do you think about this new trend of having babysitters who only babysit in the afternoons?
I think it's bold.
Stop being such a toady yes man, Mark. You're my vice president.
I think it's a bad idea.
Okay.
Sir, frankly.
Great.
I am a little dubious about the idea of young girls who are still in school babysitting at all. It feels like we should get trained professionals in here, adults.
Okay.
But I'm not going to tell you how to run a business. I'm pretty sure it's illegal, too. Can you hire 11 to 14-year-old girls?
On a contract basis. On a contract basis. And they're the only people you can find who are free in the afternoons.
I'm free every afternoon, sir.
Well, then we need to be giving you more work here at Goliath Industries.
I don't like children, and I don't know CPR, so...
It's difficult for me to wrap my head around how you ended up in this industry.
I love tennis.
Okay. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Slowly backing out of my Goliath hardbody voice, which let me say before I walk into an actual hot intro, I think for people who are just dipping into this podcast, that's a great intro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, they turn it on, they see that it's two titans of industry.
Right.
Talking about... growth business,
right?
Talking about a B2C operation, but the customer operation that has a huge opportunity for success, and they're going to want to listen more for
more explosive content about living dolls, bees, babysitters,
and Jesse's secret language. Hi, and welcome.
Wait, let me sign. Hi,
okay. He's waving.
Just waved. I think, I don't know American
Wave with
Sign
both,
Language.
Both hands. There we go. Hi. We're both waving with both hands here. And welcome to the Babysitter's Club, a podcast about the seminal American novels by American novelist Anne Matthews Martin.
From Princeton, New Jersey. We just looked it up.
Yep. We just looked it up on the iPhone. I'm Jack Shepard.
I'm Tanner Greenring.
And this week, we're talking about Jesse's Secret Language, which is book number 16 in the Babysitter's Club series, though this is episode number 17.
Great. Love it. Love it.
Love that hot
content. Love how confusing the numbering has gotten. Let's stop talking. You know what?
What?
The book numbers don't matter. Stop bringing it up.
It doesn't matter at all, does it?
It's episode 17 of the Babysitter's Club,
yep.
Jesse's Secret Language.
Jesse's Secret Language. We were introduced to a new babysitter this week. She's not totally new to fans of the series. She appeared a few books ago, but this is the first time that we are having a full Jesse point of view.
POV.
Tanner and I are going to unpack that for you today.
Yep. I didn't like it for one reason. Jesse breaks the fourth wall.
What? Don't they all?
Not really. The framing of this book was, it's a book. And not its notes.
Wait, do you honestly think that all of the previous Babysitter's Club books are just excerpts from the Babysitter's Club notebook?
Yes. Don't you? That's how they're framed.
Fundamentally, no.
Why? Well, that's definitely how this book is framed. It's a whole new storytelling method.
I think that's something. This is something that Anna Martin does. With every book, she brings a different perspective. She's had these books that are a pastiche of like dystopian fiction. She's had these books that...
I don't remember that one.
The Truth About Stacy.
Okay.
Where they have this huge Big Brother ritual.
Mm-hmm.
They have these books like Claudia and the Phantom Phone Calls, which is a callback to the Gothic novel.
Uh-huh.
And I guess this is her first sort of really postmodern book, where the narrator is breaking the fourth wall, and we are supposed to enjoy that boundary being broken down.
It's like Deadpool. It's so hot these days. Breaking the fourth wall, letting the audience in, parting the kimono to bring up an expression that we haven't said since episode 3.
Well, and it's perfect for a book that is about fundamentally about language.
Okay, I agreed. It is called Jesse's Secret Language. It's about the language of ASL.
I mean, that's superficially what it's about.
Uh-huh.
It's about a lot more than that. It's about our relationship to language in general.
Uh-huh.
It's about a number of different languages. ASL is one of the languages.
Spanish. I guess you mentioned Spanish, too, at one point.
There are so many different languages that are brought up in this book. But first, I think we owe to the Baby Nation. Yep. Did you say Baby Nation with me? Oh, that's nice.
Two episodes ago, we were in sync on Kids Incorporated, and you
felt
threw
so
in
good.
Some hot sound effects, and it sounded so good
that
I don't feel, I think, responsibly for the Baby Nation, I can't get in your way anymore.
Oh, wow. Okay, this is great. So anytime I stutter something beginning with a consonant,
I'm going to try to meet you there.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily always going to know where you're headed.
Should we try? We'll bring back one from a few episodes ago.
Kid Army.
Corporate. Oh, okay. Shit. Fuck. It was Kid Army. I fucked it up. But we're not going back. Listen, I think we owe to the
Baby Nation
a description of what the fuck happened in this book.
Okay.
If you're just tuning in and you stuck with us past our discussion of high-level business circumstances of Goliath Hardbody and Mark Markson, who I think nobody so far is a fan of. This is a little segment that we like to do where I give a very, very brief synopsis of what happened in this novel.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to let you fill in all the details in our little 60 seconds. Do we have a name for that? 60 on 60?
666, 60 seconds.
666.
Run to the hills. We'll have to get in touch with Iron Maiden to see if we can use their song, Run to the Hills, even though it probably make more sense to do Number of the Beast.
I like 666.
Yeah. 666, 60 seconds.
A little segment that we have always called The Number of the Beast.
I feel like we're going to turn off some of our more religious listeners if we keep bringing up, well, it's not our fault, it's Karen Brewer's fault.
Yeah.
Which is in the occult and Satan.
Yeah, we're just expositors of this dialogue. This podcast is an exegesis. What happens in the narrative itself
stays in the narrative, am I right? Woo!
Whoa, all right.
Spring break.
Listen, here's what happened in Babysitter's Club, Book 16, Jesse's Secret Language. Like all towns, the sleepy little town of Stony Brook is filled with people who have eyes to see, ears to hear, and mouths to speak. And yet they are blind to injustice. They are deaf to the desperate cries of the downtrodden, and they are silent in the face of the oppression, intolerance, and hatred that threatens to engulf them and destroy their society forever. What irony, then, that the last remaining hope for this short-sighted, unhearing, and unfeeling community lies in the actions of one deaf child who just maybe can teach them how to hear and how to listen. Jesse's Secret Language. You got anything to add to that, my man?
You give me 60 seconds, I'll add the actual plot of the book.
I feel like I give the broad strokes of it. All right. What the hell happened in this book? Tanner Greenring, 60 seconds starting now.
New family in town, the Braddocks. Haley and Matt are the children. Matt, deaf. Can't hear a thing. Profoundly deaf. Deaf is what it's called. The Mrs. Braddock needs a babysitter. Only person who's available on Wednesday and Monday afternoons from here to infinitum is Jessie Ramsey, who learns sign language so she can talk to Matt. Jesse Ramsey is also a ballet star and gets cast as the lead role in a ballet about a living doll, Jack. She decides to do something nice for the deaf community in Stony Brook and Stamford, Connecticut, invites a class of 8-year-old deaf children to the show, and it goes off without a hitch, and everything is great.
10 more seconds. What do you want to say?
And she makes good friends with her enemy, whose name is like Annie Rose or something like that.
Okay.
Who hates her but has a deaf sister, and she wins her over by being nice to her deaf sister.
Wow, that was really good. You didn't get the name right, but fucking hell. You gave us the entire plot of this book.
Yeah. And you know what? I almost got hung up on the name of the play. didn't let myself.
The girl in question is called Katie Beth.
Katie Beth.
There are these two girls in Jessie's class. And Jessie's dance class, her ballet class, is a lot like, it feels like if you've seen the movie Black Swan.
Yeah, a little bit. It's not quite as...
There's this like intense French ballet teacher who's always playing favorites.
And Jessie and kind of descends there's into all this... like schizophrenic madness and is sort of like manifesting characters who she's seeing out of the corner of her eyes sometimes. And
and eventually, well, I guess I won't spoil the movie, but it gets pretty dark.
Yeah, she has a hangnail that she picks, and it kind of tears off all the skin on her finger.
Yeah, and it's because of an abusive relationship with her mother that she is just totally obsessive about success, but she's lost sight of what it means to be happy.
Yeah.
And these other girls, Hillary and Katie Beth, who are in her class, are consumed with their rivalry and can't deal with the fact that Jessie is the best dancer and is going to get the big part, the Swanhilda part.
Kind of go out of her way to sabotage
and
Jessie.
Then everyone dies in the end.
I feel like everyone dying in the end is neither the plot of Jessie's Secret Language nor Black Swan.
That's true. Yeah.
So,
well, yeah. I just went on my own.
I think we really lost the thread.
Do you want to talk about dolls?
Man, do I. Here's a segment called, we got to come up with flashier segment titles for all this.
Yeah.
Seven Deadly Doll Sins.
That's pretty good. Seven Deadly Dolls.
Maybe this segment will be like, the sound of like a mobile, like, and then it'll be like a record scratch, and it'll be like,
and it goes, somebody's going,
Seven Deadly Doll Watch.
Someone in the background is going, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7
Deadly Doll Watch. Man, I hope you're editing this episode, because I'm not going to do that. There's a living doll in this book.
To tell our new listeners real quickly, just one sentence, why are we talking about dolls? At all.
Well, we're talking about dolls because, frankly, Anne M. Martin can't stop talking about dolls. It comes up in every book.
Yep.
At first, I thought it was a fun joke. Oh, there's a lot of dolls in these books, and they talk about them a lot in this way that it makes it seem like the dolls are in charge. And then it just kept happening.
Yeah.
And then it was like, every book, there's a mention of some kind of living doll.
Yeah.
Not just dolls. Living dolls. Dolls who are influencing the thoughts of others.
Yeah.
This book, the living doll manifested itself early on in the play that Jessie's ballet class is rehearsing for.
Coppelia.
Which is a Italian ballet about a doll maker who creates a doll so beautiful that a man falls in love with it and seeks it out.
Yep.
And his fiance, whose name is
Swanhilda, which is the part that Jessie plays,
needs to sort of take on the attributes of the doll and remind her fiance, like, it's not the doll, it's me.
Do you know the rest of the shit that happens in this play?
No, I didn't look it up. Too scary.
The doctor, his name is Dr. Coppelius. He creates this living doll that's so beautiful that this character called Franz falls in love with it.
Yep.
To the exclusion of his fiance,
yep,
Swanhilda. Franz comes over to try to make nice with the doll.
Yeah.
And Dr. Coppelius is like, oh, that's perfect. He comes in to talk to Dr. Coppelius about these dolls. And Dr. Coppelius had been looking for a willing subject because he realizes that he can make these dolls come alive if he sacrifices a human.
That happens?
And their soul goes into the doll.
That happens?
This is a children's book that we're reading, and the subtext is utterly terrifying. In some versions of the play, the doll ends up cutting the head off of Franz, the lover.
So the doll does come to life.
But in this version, Swanhilda saves the day.
Right.
She's able to imitate this living doll and cause all this confusion that allows her and Franz to escape.
Right.
But the plan was to sacrifice Franz and put his spirit into the mechanical doll to make it come alive.
Imagine how fucked up that'd be, man. Like, you're killed. You, Jack.
Yeah.
You're just trying to get it on with a doll.
Yeah. Normal. Something that might happen any day.
Any day.
Any day.
And then you're killed by an old man, and you wake up, and all of a sudden, you are the doll.
Oh, God.
And then, like, some other young man is, like, lusting after you. You know, like, do it, man.
Yeah, go for it.
Fall in love with me. Take my place.
Yeah.
Anyway, Seven Deadly Doll Watch.
Yep. So the idea here for Seven Deadly Doll Watch is that each doll referenced in the Ann M. Martin verse represents one of the seven deadly sins.
Right.
Mrs. Refrigerator is a doll from a previous book who obviously stands in for gluttony.
Right. Mrs. Xerox.
Mrs. Xerox, very obviously envy.
And now we have Coppelia.
Yeah.
Lust.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Number three. Seven Deadly Doll Watch.
Three down, four to go.
Put it up on the board.
Put it up on the big board, everyone. Wow.
That's good stuff. Do you want to keep talking about the occult in this book, or do you want to move on to something else? Because there's
a lot more occult?
There's quite a lot. Karen Brewer, a favorite character, young Karen Brewer.
Oh, yeah, there's the ghost party.
Hosts a ghost party
in
her house. I wrote down the opening for that little ghost party. Hi, said Karen, I'm going to be very busy tonight. There's a ghost party on the third floor. And you're going to it? Asked Claudia. Are you kidding?
Don't be silly.
Are you kidding? Replied Karen. That would be crazy. But I am in charge of refreshments. All night is going to be my job to take the food from the bottom of the third floor stairs and leave it there for the ghosts.
Have we encountered any bad ghosts? They've all seemed pretty friendly.
We've got old Ben Brewer. Yeah.
Who's a gentle old man who eats dandelions.
Yeah.
We've got the ghost from the ride at Disneyland, who now lives with old Ben Brewer up on the third floor.
Yeah.
We've got Anus.
Well,
who was never a bad guy, he just didn't want to leave home.
I think Anus was a bad guy. Karen talks about the distinction between good ghosts and bad ghosts in this book, and she says, the friendly ones are the ones who smile and call, hi, Andrew. The spooky ones just say, boo!
You know what? That doesn't scan for me.
Yeah.
Because if I was in a haunted house and a ghost said, hi, Tanner, I'd be pretty fucking freaked out. But if one was just like, boo, I'd be like, oh, I see what you're doing. You're doing a ghost thing.
Oh, I read it as that they're like booing you.
No, have you? Is this an English versus Americanism thing? You know, ghosts say boo, right?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Like, not like
they're
booing.
Super fucking negative.
No, it's a scare. It's always a jump scare.
They're always belittling you. They think you'll never amount to anything.
Maybe it's like those baseball players whose name rhymes with boo. And you cheer them on as they come out. You say, oh, yeah, Bruce. Totally.
That's a good segue because I want to talk a little bit about football.
American sports.
Do you want to make that into a segment?
No.
I'm into it. American. This week on the Babysitter's Club, American sports.
Yeah, I feel like our audience of people who love the Babysitter's Club books are really going to be into American sports.
Baby boys, baby girls.
Who got
girls.
Traded to the Washington Wizards this week? I'll tell you who. Popeye Jones. Is he still playing?
Don't you dare look that up. People are going to hang on by a thread with what I'm going to talk about next, which is the 1988 New England Patriots. But they're going to hate when you finally come back from your fucking phone and tell us what
Assistant
Popeye
Coach,
Jones is up to right now.
Retired in 96? No. Mm-hmm. Yep. Retired in 96. Currently an assistant coach for the Indiana Pacers.
Great. Thanks. Okay. Note to
Popeye Jones.
Editing this episode. Cut out the Popeye Jones stuff. But in this week's
Globetrotters.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've seen them many times.
Yeah?
My dad used to bring me and my sister when we were young. He loved it.
Are they super good?
It's a very fun show.
I don't understand why they didn't actually just beat regular NBA teams.
Because it's fake. It's all theater. It's all choreography.
Oh, they plan it all.
Yeah.
You know what? That's one of those things that happens where it's like, the last time I thought about the Harlem Globetrotters, I was probably like 9.
And you didn't realize.
And I literally, between then and this moment, I haven't had any thoughts at all about the Harlem Globetrotters. So I still had this like antiquated like way of thinking about
yeah,
it that was like, oh, like, man, they're so fucking good at basketball.
Man, I'd say American sports is a pretty rocking subject so far.
Oh, it's good. We've got a lot to say. Listen, I want to talk about the 1988 New England Patriots. Matt Braddock, who is the star of this book, other than Jesse, and we do need to talk about him. He's a deaf boy, and Jesse learned sign language to be able to talk to him.
Right.
And he seems like a good guy.
He's a chill dude. Here's one thing he likes.
Yeah.
Bugs.
Oh, does he?
Here's another thing he likes. American sports.
Sports. As is often the case, we've been talking about this too long to bear the weight of the comment that I'm going to make.
Uh-huh.
But
That's right where I like to be.
Yeah, that's what, you like sitting on the edge of that. But Matt Braddock, when he finally actually breaks through and speaks to these other kids, like, everyone gets addicted to the sign language. Like, everyone starts learning sign language because they think it's so fucking cool. And finally, like, the other boys, the Pike boys, all learn sign language so they can talk to him. And the first thing that he says to them is, I think that the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
87.
88.
88.
That's fucking insane. If you know anything about football, making a prediction that the Patriots were going to win the Super Bowl in 88 is just like the dumbest possible thing. It's like saying Dukakis is going to be the next fucking president. In 1988, the Patriots were fucking garbage. Yeah. They went 9-7 that year, and that start. They, you know who they had under center? No, you don't. His name was Tony Eason.
Uh-huh.
You ever heard of him?
Easing like Sunday morning.
After 1988, the Patriots went 5-11, 1-15, 6-10, and 2-14. And one of the worst.
Sorry, did you say 1-15?
1-15. They won one game the next year.
Yeah.
And Connecticut is Giants country. Connecticut is Giants country.
No, Patriots.
I mean, it's split. But you could be a Giants fan who would literally go on to win the Super Bowl 2 years later.
You know what seems like a ripoff?
What?
The Giants and the Jets, mm-hmm. both New York teams,
mm-hmm.
play in New Jersey.
Yep.
And they both play at the same goddamn stadium.
Yeah, that does seem like kind of bullshit.
Just, like, give a team to Montana. Like, why do we need two teams, neither of which play in our own state,
yep.
playing at the same stadium?
It's all about population.
How about
hello,
Hawaii?
And welcome to Sports Talk
sports.
With Jack Shepard and
the Weasel.
Weasel. Good.
Ironically, I'm Jackie? Jack Shepard.
Oh, you're
it's
Jack Shepard. And
name,
I'm oh, because I got the
you're
nasal
the weasel.
Voice. Yeah, I'm the Weasel. I'm like the fast-talking nasal voice.
Yeah.
You know what we should talk about?
This goddamn book?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you?
Yeah.
Jack Shepard.
I prefer the Weasel.
Did you, the Weasel,
mm-hmm.
have a burn of the week? A keep it going, I'm going to meet you there. Keep it going, I'm going to meet you there. Burn of the week! Damn, I fucked that up so bad.
Want to try it again?
No, I don't. Did you have a burn of the week?
No.
What do you mean?
I didn't have one, man. I fucking looked all over. I tried so hard. I literally could not find a single burn in this book. Did you have a burn of the week, my man?
Yeah.
Oh, thank fucking God for that.
My burn of the week was this.
Okay.
One of the bikes.
Okay.
So the boys are all sitting around eating a paschetti and telling rude poems.
Oh, yeah.
About their spaghetti.
Mm-hmm.
And Margot Pike, who's infamous for having a weak stomach,
mm-hmm.
is not into the rude poem that Nikki and Byron are telling about how their spaghettis are worms,
mm-hmm.
is like, oh, I'm gonna hurl, and runs from the kitchen table and stops 5 paces away from the kitchen table and turns around and says, gotcha.
Yeah, I captured that moment as well where they're singing about worms and Margot almost throws up.
What heading did you capture it under?
The secret rhythms of the universe.
Uh-huh.
There's more under that heading.
So one of my favorite segments on this show.
It sounds like a Carl Sagan or something.
Yeah.
Let me just read you the passage real quick. But it was too late to stop the worm song. By then, Byron was holding a strand of spaghetti over his mouth. First one was slimy, second one was grimy, he sang, continuing the song. Mallory, shrieked Margot, looking a little green. Oh no, not the worm song. Please stop the boys before something goes wrong, said Vanessa Pike, future poet.
Yeah.
Like,
you screwed up the cadence.
No, I didn't.
Oh no, not the worm song.
Oh no,
please
oh,
stop
no.
the
not
boys.
Not the worm song.
Stop the boys before something goes wrong.
Now that I realize that it's a rhyme, it makes
sense. Why do you think they emphasize the fact that she was a future poet?
Because I thought that she was worried that like they were going to get the scansion wrong.
Yep. she's a future poet and like esoteric academic pedant.
Yeah.
She saw that, which is, this is how I always feel when they start doing a rhyme, is I'm like, oh God, it's not going to fucking scan. They're going to have all these extra beats and like, there's going to be like spondies when there should be iams.
Shut up.
That is how I feel every time they do a rhyme in these books. And I was like, oh, okay, Vanessa Pike is on the same fucking page with me.
Yeah. You always see the world through pedant colored glasses.
And in my hubris, I missed that the reason that she was being called out as a future poet there was because she was making a rhyme.
Yeah. A rhyme that fit very well into a couplet.
Yeah, I guess it is. It works. It's fine. It scans. And I was just, I was frankly lashing out because I missed something really obvious that was happening.
I know, man. I was just going to give you a chance to walk it back and apologize to me and Margot Pike.
Everybody, it's Jack again with a brand new update about the delightful family mystery mobile game, June's Journey. I have been making real progress solving puzzles and getting stuff to put on my cool estate in the fun world of mystery, danger, and romance that's conjured up by June's Journey, a game set in the roaring 20s about a daring young woman named June who's traveling to her sister's estate to uncover scandalous family secrets and customizing her own luxurious estate island in the process. Tanner, unfortunately, is still pretty convinced by the ad brief we were sent that he has actually been assigned on a real secret mission to uncover the killer of June's sister, Claire. The good news is that after some extremely frustrating conversations with the unbelievably patient people at the Central Connecticut Steamship Authority, I was able to clear up the fracas regarding the steamship that Tanner rented. But the bad news is that, if I'm reading this hastily scrawled missive correctly, he appears to have gotten himself horribly lost in a hedge maze in Würzburg, which I think is in Germany. According to the secret code on the back of the letter, which, to be clear, he's just written this part upside down, he is in good spirits and he is hot on the tail of Grandma Heath, and I shouldn't worry, but could I please send him 40 ducats in an unmarked envelope so that he can bribe the butler, which sounds both complicated and questionably legal. I'm going to keep you guys posted on this, but in the meantime, you can discover your inner detective just like I have when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. I have to go. There is apparently a carrier pigeon at the door with a new message from Tanner.
Let's talk about language, truth, and meaning.
Yeah, can't wait.
This is a book that is fundamentally about language.
Yeah, sign language. American Sign Language.
Sign language is one of what I would say are the three major languages.
English. American English.
No.
It's the second one. And the third one is the secret language from the book, The Secret Language.
Nope. That's your one for three.
Okay.
The second language is the language of dance.
Okay.
Jessie uses dance to express herself. And Jessie's so much more talented than any of the rest of the babysitters.
Yeah, she gets the lead role in...
She gets a lead role in Coppelia. These other fucking babysitters who did nothing this book, as seems to be what happens nowadays.
Uh-huh.
Fucking 20 years from now, when they're still in 8th grade, unless Anne Martin thoughtfully releases them from the time...
The oozing amber within which they are trapped.
Yeah. Let's imagine a universe in which Anna Martin released the restraints on time and let them grow up.
Is all the time they miss going to catch up with them very quickly and they're going to age like 20 years overnight?
That's horrifying. I hope not. I guess that's something we'll have to ask Anne when she gets
on the
podcast.
I hope so, man. Think about that. Think about if you skipped from the blissful days of being a 13-year-old right to 40 and you miss out on all the awkward teen and college years and the beginning of your career. You just go right to being a high earner in the late stages of your career.
Like you're on your second marriage.
Sounds good to me, man.
Yeah, that sounds actually pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You skip the divorce. You're just on your second marriage.
Yeah, you're just on your second. You're super happy finally.
Right.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
I can't wait for these girls to finally catch up.
You got pictures of your daughters in your cubicle.
Right.
Keeps you going.
Yeah. That sounds really nice.
That's good. One morning, you go to bed. It's eighth grade. And you're like, oh, man, still dating old Logan. I wonder if he's going to give me his varsity jacket
right.
or whatever. Or give me his, what is that? What do they call it? Whatever.
I think you wear a ring on a necklace.
He's going to give me a ring, some kind of a ring on a necklace.
Yeah.
As I have been thinking for what seems somehow like years, even though like I haven't aged a day.
Uh-huh.
The next thing you know, you're sitting in your cubicle. Your hair is thinning.
There's a well-tarnished promise ring on a necklace around your neck.
Yeah. And you're like, man, that was a fucking mistake. That was 8 years of my fucking life down the drain.
Yeah.
Logan turned out to be a deadbeat, no good.
Satanist.
Fucking Satan worshiping.
Devil.
But
demon,
boy,
demon that, summoner.
That Louisville accent.
Woo! Rocked me to sleep.
Who are we in this metaphor? We're a 13-year-old girl, right? Who woke up as a 40-year-old.
I guess, but like I often do with these books.
Yeah.
I relate to these girls because I'm supposed to. I'm reading these books from their perspective.
Yeah.
But the gulf between me, a 32-year-old man, and these 13-year-old girls is so wide that something always fails to add up.
This is Anne and Martin's obsession, is desperately trying to hang on to your innocence.
Yeah.
As time ravages you, as adults come in and impinge on your world and try to make you grow up, try to make you grow apart from your friends. Like Stacy got taken by it. Stacey got taken by it, by time, by New York, by the city, by these
She's escaped
forces.
The bubble. Stacey's probably
she's probably
19
like,
by this point.
Yeah. She's in college now. She's at NYU.
Right. They call her and it's like Claudia and Charlotte. And she's like, Claudia Kishi? I haven't thought about you in years.
You haven't
like,
changed at all.
You still sound so young. Like,
yeah.
What are you up to these days?
Well, and didn't Stacy sell her dolls at the garage sale before she left for New York?
Yeah, she did. You know who she sold her doll to?
Who?
Jenny Prezioso.
Oh, wow.
You know who in this book is a tyrant monster who goes around bossing everyone around and trying to impose her will on the citizens of Stony Brook?
Jenny Prezioso.
Jenny Prezioso, who's been taken control of by a doll.
That's a strong statement.
It's a strong statement, Jack. It's just a huge coincidence that two books ago, she buys a doll from
a garage sale,
and now she's this monster imposing her will on the city, trying to get her way.
Oh, she's horrifying. Do you want to describe for the baby nation what happened in that scene?
I can't actually remember. I just remember she's really mean to Matt Bradford.
Jenny Prezioso and Marianne are going for a walk, because Jenny Prezioso is being a real brat. And Jesse and Matt are going for a walk at the same time. And Jesse's like, oh, hey, this is Matt. He can't hear you, but he can hear you if you sign language with him and I can translate.
Right.
And Jenny just goes straight up to him and like yells in his ear, like, can you hear me?
Right.
Why can't you hear me?
Yeah.
And like Marianne is so embarrassed and like Matt is just like taken aback. Like, what the fuck is this person doing? But he like doesn't know what's happening.
No, he doesn't hear her.
And then
he just sees a girl shouting in his face.
And then Jenny just turns to Marianne and she's like, can we leave now? He's weird. I don't like him.
Yeah.
Ugh, it's horrifying. And that's like, you're going to hate this because this is going to bring me back to the point that I was making like 20 fucking minutes ago when we started this conversation. Stony Brook is broken. And a part of why it's broken is because language, as has come up in previous books, is holding it back. People are constrained by these cultural norms.
There's a lot of things holding Stony Brook back, man.
Sure.
Institutional sexism. Institutional racism.
Yeah.
Ableism.
And maniacal, demonic dolls who are controlling everyone in the town and dictating their every action.
Yep.
That's a tough slate of things to be handed with.
Yeah. Well, imagine growing up a young woman in this town.
Ugh.
You're just at a huge disadvantage.
And you know what I would want to do if I were a young woman in this town? I would want to have a language of my own. I would want to have a way of expressing myself that wasn't tainted by the chains of a patriarchal linguistic structure.
Okay.
I would want to have a language like, and this is going back to what I was saying, number one, Jesse's secret language, sign language. Number two,
dance.
Jesse's secret language, dance.
Dance.
And the third language, which speaks to this point, is the language of Squirt, Jesse's baby pre-linguistic little brother.
Uh-huh. I assume you did this because this is the type of person you are. Did you look up all of Squirt's quotes and try to decipher some kind of meaning from them?
Why would you think that I would do that?
This is the kind of person you are.
I'm not going to look with a language like that that's undefined. Uh-huh. You don't go and look that up on Wikipedia and try to figure out what's going on. If you know anything about how Linear B was deciphered or about how hieroglyphics were deciphered before the Rosetta Stone.
Did you say Linear B?
Yes.
Hmm.
Hmm. Don't you dare don't you dare try to tempt me with B's to get me off of this point that I'm going to make. But here is what I did do. I wrote down.
Oh, shit. You went to fucking school for this, didn't you?
No.
Goddamn linguistics. You're always telling me about gleamer.
Oh, yeah.
Proto-Germanic.
Proto-Indo-European.
Proto-Indo-European languages.
Yes.
And God, what, Baby Nation, like, we go to lunch sometimes, and I'm just like, hey, man, what'd you do this week? Oh, I read some very interesting documents about Proto-European linguistic traditions. Did you know that gleam and glimmer have the same root? It's very stimulating.
I'm so glad that that stuck with you. It's the Indo-European G-H-E-L. And glide as well. Glide comes from that same root as well. Here's what I did. I created a table. And
Your life, man. It just, you say things and it bums me out so much sometimes.
This is interesting. This is a book that's about language and we have an undeciphered language in it.
Uh-huh.
It's so interesting. I created a table for everything that Squirt says.
Uh-huh.
And the definition and the...
I know you did. I know you did.
And the context for why he was saying it so that we can get to the definition.
Okay.
So we know some undefined ones. We know some ones that have definite, clear meanings, and we can extrapolate from some other ones. Here's what I've got. Squirt, the baby, says ubla.
Yeah.
That's undefined. He says mama.
Right.
Which we think refers to his mother.
Right.
He says dada, which we think refers to his father.
Dad, yeah.
He says ba, which means bird.
Bird.
He says akamini, which means ice cream. Oh, you know that.
Yeah.
Good man. He says go blue, which is undefined.
Nothing, yeah.
He says dur bliss, which is supposed to be comforting. He says that when he's trying to comfort Jesse.
Right.
He says blue ga, which is undefined.
Right.
And he says gaga, which is milk.
Yes. Okay. Hey, now bring it home. What are you going to tell me? This is an infernal. What we're actually reading is the language of the demons, infernal.
Nope. You wish that that was the case.
What we're actually reading is the language of the lobster people from the Dark Tower series, Data Chum, and they bite off a roll on the gunslinger's fingers.
Baby Nation, anyone who crosses over who listens to this podcast and also is a huge fan of the Stephen King's Dark Tower series, I'm speaking to you personally right now. I want to meet you. Because that is a rare Venn diagram.
Just me and you, man.
It's just the two of us. But no, that's not what we're going to do. What we're going to do is we're going to very briefly figure out the meanings of some of the words that are undefined from context of the other meanings.
Okay.
We know that bluga was said when he had just dirtied his diaper.
Yuck.
So we think that the meaning probably means diaper change needed,
yeah.
Something like that.
It's a statement of discomfort.
Possibly. Well, here's what I've got. Ga, the phoneme ga, appears in a word that we know. Ga-ga means milk. So I think that ga by itself must mean some kind of liquid.
Yeah.
So blue, therefore, must mean waste.
Liquid waste.
So blue ga means liquid waste.
Yes.
And the only other one that I have, and this is there, I don't have a ton of this, but you know,
we have a very limited.
This is what
set.
It. This think about this is must have been what it was like when Alice Kolber.
Oh man,
finally,
tell me about it, Alice Kolber
finally cracked the code of Linear B and figured out, and she was looking at this language, she was looking at these fucking like random phonemes, like all these like hieroglyphs, didn't know what they meant, and she realized like, wait a second. Wait a fucking second.
Blue god, liquid waste. Go ahead. What was the other word we didn't know?
The other word that we don't know is go blue.
Okay, so we know blue is liquid.
And so she says...
And what is the context?
The context is she says go blue. He says go blue when Jesse is waking up her sister, Becca, by bringing Squirt in to wake her up. And Becca wakes up and Squirt looks Becca in the face and he says go blue. So he says something
liquid
waste.
Oh, blue is waste.
Blue is waste. Something waste. Go. We don't know. We have no context for go.
Maybe it's like don't waste today.
Oh, well, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
that's like, really nice.
Embrace.
It's like carpe diem.
Yeah,
that's great. See, it's pretty interesting, right?
I guess. It's not going to make for very good podcast listening, though.
I think that was well, I'll tell you something. That was fucking the most fun that I've had in a long time.
Yeah, we should just do a language podcast then. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you have a tearful moment?
Do we have to do it with a for
we don't have to. If you can come up with another, like,
what's a
lead in?
Like babies, like.
Record scratch. Tearful moment.
Tearful moment.
I only have two intros, and one of them is ta 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 ta.
Yeah.
And one of them is nursery rhyme played normally, and then there's a record scratch, and then it's like heavy metal.
Yeah. It's Jackie and the Weasel. We're talking about what made us cry this week in the Babysitter's Club.
We're talking about two things, sports and what made us cry.
You know what made me cry this week, Jackie? It was the 1988 Patriots. Wow. That was a stinker. 1-15.
What was the guy's name?
Tony Eason.
Tony Eason?
Tony Eason under center.
More like Tony...
Tony Weason.
Not pleasing.
Tony not pleasing. You know what else didn't please me, Jackie? The first thing that didn't please me was Tony Eason, star quarterback of the New England Patriots, totally dropping the ball in 1988. Second thing that didn't please me is a moment in Jesse's Secret Language, the Babysitter's Club book, that made me cry.
Yeah.
Here it was. Jesse gives this dance recital. She invites everyone from the deaf school to come and see it. She has sign language interpreters. She does shit that, like, I literally wouldn't be able to organize even at 37 years of age as a person who's had a career for, like, 15, 20
like
years.
Like an affluent man of means.
Yeah.
Couldn't manage to pull
this
together.
Anyway, all that happens. Setting that aside, all that happens. Christopher Gerber, who was playing Franz and I, let go of the
Holy
people
shit,
on
man.
Either
this
side
is the
of
exact
it.
Exact same paragraph. I highlight it as my tearful moment.
Well, should we talk about it together?
Should we, like, read it together?
No, that's weird, because then it gets creepy.
Okay.
I'm going to read it out. I'm going to read it out for the Baby Nation.
Okay, well, Baby Nation know that this is also my tearful moment.
Baby Nation know. Baby Nation know. This is a BSCC first. We both have...
Tandem tears.
Tandem tears. Two men, two tears.
Two men enter, two tears leave.
Two men, four eyes, two total tears.
Good.
That's good. Jackie and the Weasel crying for you. We're shedding tears tonight.
Read the paragraph.
Christopher Gerber, who was playing Franz, and I let go of the people on either side of us and step forward to take our own bows. As we straightened up, I saw a figure climbing the steps to the stage. It was Matt. His arms were full of roses. He walked timidly across the stage and handed them to me. Then he signed, "Thank you from all of us." The audience had grown silent. I translated for them. Then, cradling the roses in one arm, I signed to Matt, "You're welcome. This is the best night of my life." Matt signed, "Mine too." And when I translated that, the audience laughed gently. And then everyone fucking loses it. Everyone's fucking crying.
Yeah, everyone, like, people are, like, shuffling through their bags for Kleenex.
Stony Brook has shown its true colors in the last couple of books. It's full of these Jenny Preciosos who, like, don't know how to accept a deaf child.
Right.
And also, what's the name of Jesse's friend in the ballet class? Katie Beth. These Katie Beths who...
Consumed by jealousy.
Yeah, is consumed by jealousy, and she also has her own deaf sister, who we haven't talked about, Adele. But
right.
She, like, refuses to learn sign language. But Stony Brook has shown its true colors, and it's, like, stuck inside these, like, calcified cultural and social norms.
Right.
And then you bring in a totally new language, a new way of seeing things, a new way of talking about things, a new way of hearing things. And it changes people. And that moment was that. Like, everyone in the audience... suddenly realizes what it's like to accept somebody who is different from you.
Uh-huh.
Is that why you cried? Why did you cry?
It was very beautiful.
Yeah. I wrote down a fucking ton of tearful moments, man.
I wrote down a bunch, but they're not as good as that last
that's
one,
the
which, winner. Which I wrote down as true tearful moment.
Yeah.
I actually, that's right at the end of the book.
Yeah.
And as you know, I texted you before I got here.
Uh-huh.
I was running a little behind this week and went to the bar across the street from your house to finish up the last 10, 15 pages or so of this book, and broke into tears while at your favorite bar. And I hope
Don't triangulate. Do not triangulate by naming that bar.
It's not, its name is not important, but I hope I didn't embarrass you as someone who is seen occasionally at that bar with me. You're going to go there, the bartender's going to be like, hey, you know that, like, tall friend of yours? You'd be like, yeah. He's like, yeah. He came in the other day, didn't say a word to anyone, bought a beer, sat at the bar, pulled out a Kindle, and just started crying.
Just started
is he okay?
Yeah. He was reading a children's book.
It was a very touching moment where a deaf boy, like, expresses himself to a babysitter.
I mean, that is touching. So I got a couple things really briefly that I want to touch on before we wrap things up. One is, and I don't know if it's the dolls or the bees or the witches or the demons.
Or the ghosts.
But it's been a long time since we read a Babysitter's Club book that was about these girls coming together and solving a problem.
Books, they've been at odds.
They're just, like, Claudia is just, like, in the depths of despair.
I gotta, man. Like, you not know what? Not to interject. Yeah. I'm worried about Claudia.
Yeah.
Because, as I said earlier, this book introduced this new framing device, which was first-person written narratives from the babysitters.
Oh, wow.
As they're written in the notebook.
You think Claudia's
And we
books?
Got one from Claudia.
Yeah.
And it is so comically rife with errors and spelling mistakes that it looks like it's written by, like, a toddler.
Yeah. Yeah, what's going on, man? Like, you, like, learn to spell. You're in fucking eighth grade.
I think this might be back to the infinite sadness of Claudia, though.
Yeah.
Well, I think she's just breaking down.
Yeah. She's falling apart. She's falling apart, but I kind of think everyone else is falling apart. What did Dawn get up to this week? I don't know.
She was from California and had long blonde hair.
She was from California, and her hair was flaxen.
Yep.
The final thing that I want to briefly address with you before we wrap things up, if you are able to touch your nose with your tongue, it will mean that you eventually will need a very big bra.
For what? Like, fishing? What would you need a big bra for?
I mean, I'm just reading from the text here. The girls early on have a conversation where they say that if you are able to touch your nose with your tongue,
you would eventually need
a very big bra.
Very big bra. What for?
I don't know. What would you keep in a bra?
A very big one?
Yeah, a large one.
The thing that comes immediately to mind is, like, rocks.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
I guess, like, it's like a sling?
Yeah, it's like David and Goliath.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad we put that to rest. Is there anything else you would like to say?
Let me check my notes. I don't think so. Anything else you want to say?
No, man. I got it all out. I got it all out for once.
No, we got all my notes.
Oh, here's something I'd like to say to the Baby Nation before we wrap up. Baby Nation.
Like, subscribe, rate, review.
Like, subscribe, rate, review. Do us a favor. Give us a little rating on iTunes and give us a little review on iTunes if you can and feel like saying something nice. I like to read them. Tanner, do you read them?
I don't read comments because
you're deeply insecure.
Oh, my God. Profoundly.
Right. So don't leave any. Yeah, well, actually, yeah. If you leave a nasty comment, Tanner won't read it, but he'll have expected it.
Yeah, but just don't. Leave nice comments for me. If you have something nasty to say, just say it about Jack. He can handle it more.
Yeah.
He's better equipped to handle it.
I'm a tough guy. I can deal with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, please subscribe on iTunes. Give us a rating and a review, like our page on Facebook. Check out our website, babysittersclubclub.com.
Yeah, Jack puts tireless hours into writing up our show notes every week.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I'm the only one who reads it. So go give it a look.
Right now it's just for Tanner.
Yep.
Go for Tanner.
It sounds cool when you say it.
It is cool when I say
go
that.
For Tanner.
Go for Tanner.
Go for Tanner.
Go for Tanner. If you ever run a marathon, I'll shout that to you.
I'm running a 10K in a few weeks.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you do that four times over and then run three more miles, I will shout go for Tanner at you right at the end of that.
Sounds like you're saying go for Tanner.
Go for Tanner.
Like I'm a gopher.
Yeah, that's cool. Go for Tanner. Listen, what you have been listening to has been an episode of the Babysitters Club. I have been Jack Shepherd.
I have been Gopher Tanner.
Gopher Tanner. What we read this week was Jesse's Secret Language. Next week, we're going to be reading a Marianne point of view, and I'm hoping things are going to come back into focus a little bit. We're going to see these girls actually interacting with each other and solving a problem together instead of just like being at odds.
When was the last time we had a Christie POV?
Christie and the Snobs.
That was ages ago.
When was the last time we had a Marianne POV?
Who cares?
Logan likes Marianne.
No, it wasn't book 10.
It was. Book 10 was the last time we had a Marianne point of view.
Wow. We haven't heard shit from Marianne and Christy kind of get the bum's deal when new babysitters are introduced.
Yeah, they just put it off. And Marianne and Christy, to me, are the two main babysitters.
Yeah.
And they've just been in the background.
It's the Jack Shepherd and the Weasel of the Babysitters Club.
Oh, wow, that's true. That is exactly true. But finally, next week, we're going to be reading a little book that is called Marianne's Bad Luck Mystery.
Huh, sounds intriguing.
I'm pretty excited about it. Claudia's wearing a bra now. The way she talks, you'd think boys had just been invented.
In 86, Anne M. Martin wrote the first book of what became a cult. Now it's time for Babysitter's Club.
Ms. Martin, I'm glad we finally have you on the show, Anne.
Hello! It's me, Annie Martin.
It's so nice to have you here. Calling in from Stony Brook, Connecticut.
Calling in from Stony Brook, Connecticut, where I live. How are you, Jack?
I'm doing great.
You're looking very handsome today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I got a quick question for you. Did you write these books about bees?
No, I wrote them about dolls.